Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
Yeah! Time to get a lift.
A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. And you'll hear shortly from Michael Remus, the operator of the R-Desk. Gentlemen, Richard, Ezra, good morning.
Hey, Drew. Drew, is it true that Remus burnt your car and flipped it over and smashed the windows?
That is true. I thought it was a little uncalled for. I mean, I don't know what his reasoning for that was.
Based on the details Remus gave us of his night last night, that might have happened.
It's possible. It's possible. It's a good thing that my car is parked securely in the underground parkade at my building, because otherwise he was starting a riot.
Remus is an anarchist.
But you don't have to be an anarchist, and we'll get into that. Because I have a lot of opinions on this, as I was sharing with you guys just off air a second ago.
Hey, Ez.
Hey, Richie. It's great to be here with Richard the Icon Pollock and Drew the Bear Mindell and Michael the Riot Remus and Tim the Tool Man. And
what's your own nickname?
Just Ezra.
Just Ezra?
Just
yeah. Ezra.
Just,
okay. You know, just no, like, no like Oprah, just Ezzie? One word. Ezzie, just one name.
Next week, you're going in the draft. You rep an IC.
I should probably have a new nickname.
You, Remus, and Kyle.
Should probably have a new nickname.
We're going to have on today.
Yeah.
You better have a nickname by then.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I assume TSN's going to want to interview at some point during the draft coverage next weekend.
Right, and they're going to want a fresh nickname.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just come as Ezra. You got to be, I'm not sure what you should be.
Dutchie's already taken,
Did you want Dutchie as a nickname? Is that what you wanted?
It's a good...
Do you want to be Double Deuce? You can be Double Deuce.
It's a bad nickname, Drew.
That's a bad nickname.
Let's get started here, Drew.
Nicknames have to be given to you, so...
Drew, you're getting us off track.
I'm getting you off track. It's amazing how quickly there's revisionist history going on left, right, and center in the studio. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday morning. We have a full 3 hours ahead for you. Pretty much we're focusing on three things throughout the course of this program today. First hour is going to be spent sort of doing a Stanley Cup Finals recap, a playoff recap, a season recap, and a riot recap, because you really got to go deep into the riot recap.
I hope we don't spend too much time on the riot recap.
We're spending time on the riot recap.
I mean, it was absolutely disgraceful, and I don't think there's anything you can say at this point aside from it unfortunately overshadowed the game. It really did. I don't care what anyone says. It was disgraceful is the only word that I can come up with now. So I hope we don't spend more than 2 minutes on it, because
then you're gonna be sadly disappointed.
Honestly, Drew, I don't believe for a second it's reflective of the city of Vancouver, Canadians, or hockey fans or anything. I think it was a small group of people don't say
they were anarchists, because I've never heard of the people that were involved in looting and burning and everything else were not anarchists. And for the Vancouver police to say that they were anarchists,
Drew, that's the next segment.
Okay, sorry, I'm getting heated already.
I say the Sedins might have been there, but they didn't show up in Vancouver at all this year.
Yeah, so it's obviously they weren't there. Anyways, coming up at 10 o'clock this morning, the Illegal Curve scouting correspondent Kyle Cozier is going to join us, do a little bit of a draft preview for next. Next weekend, where Kyle and Ezzy and Remus are going to be live in St. Paul, Minnesota at the Xcel Energy Arena. It's going to be Xcel Energy Center, broadcasting live with Richie and I back here in the studio. So there's going to be a lot of draft stuff going on in the next week or so here on the Illegal Curve.
Well, Drew, let me cut in for a second. That is the first time that we'll be able to have some kind of player movement.
That's right. We'll actually know, we'll know a guy who's definitely going to be a member of the Winnipeg whatevers come next season. So everybody's very excited for the draft coming up. 10:30 this morning, Chris Vivlamore, our good friend from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is going to join us. We're going to talk to Chris largely about Craig Ramsey and what he brings to the table as a potential head coach. Probably nobody more familiar with his coaching style than Chris. So we're thrilled to welcome Chris back to the program to talk about Craig Ramsey. Coming up at 11:30 this morning, Dave Staples from the Edmonton Journal, he's going to talk to us about Craig McTavish and his coaching style. As you can see, we're trying to really break down deep into these some of the potential coaches that might head the Winnipeg Whatevers NHL franchise on the ice. So, you know, Chris Vivlemore on Craig Ramsey, Dave Staples on Craig McTavish. We'll talk about Claude Noel a bit. We're going to talk about Mike Haviland a bit. They're in Chicago interviewing him this weekend. So lots of coaching stuff, lots of Stanley Cup Finals talk, and a lot of draft talk today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Do you read into the fact, and I guess that question has to be asked, do we read into the fact that Chevalier and Zinger went down to Chicago to interview Haviland, whereas McTavish flew into Winnipeg?
I'm not sure what the logic for that would be. I don't read too much into it because I don't know what the general protocol is. Mm-hmm. I would think the protocol would be that the coach would come into the city.
Probably, yeah.
But, you know, I don't. Of the four potential head coaches, mm-hmm. I'd be surprised. I think I'd be most surprised if Haviland got this.
Well, you know, Drew, just to get back to, you know, what Richie was asking, like, how much can you read into, you know, True North, specifically Zinger and Chevy going to Chicago? I tend to believe that the guys that are at the top of the list are Claude Noel, Haviland, and Mac T. And I think that Haviland, you could maybe say that maybe they're pursuing him a little bit harder than they're pursuing Mac T. Because, Richie, it's been pretty clear that Mac T wants to get back into the NHL, you know, specifically as a coach. And it's only been a couple of years, you know, two and a half years. Hasn't been that long. You know, things obviously got to a point where, you know, it was time for Mac T to... It was time. He was the coach for 8 years.
Maybe it was time, quote-unquote, but, I mean, the Oilers have really succeeded without him. Oh, wait, they've been the worst team in the league for 2 years.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think it'll be an interesting coaching hire. You know, I thought at first that Ramsey was sort of getting a courtesy interview, but...
I still have that belief, Drew.
Really? You don't think he's got a chance?
You know, especially based on Kevin Chevalier's comments on this radio show last week, when we didn't ask him, didn't tell us who the head coach was going to be, because he wasn't going to tell us, you know, rightfully so. We asked him the style that he wanted in a coach. What he wants is an up-tempo style, a fast-paced style, a more aggressive style. Craig Ramsey is more of a, now I know not necessarily reflective in the numbers last year, in terms of Atlanta being a, you know, higher scoring team and poor defensively. I don't think that fits into Craig Ramsey's overall philosophy. I think he's more of a defensive coach. I'm not saying he can't adapt to the game and hasn't adapted, but I think that they're looking for a little bit more of an aggressive, more forechecking based and attack style. I think Ramsey's a little bit more conducive to more defensive. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that he can't compliment somebody being hired. I just find it to be an odd arrangement if it's, you know, were, say, Claude Noel and Craig Ramsey. You're talking about two guys who have been head bosses in the NHL before. Let a guy pick his own staff.
I don't think you'll see two of the candidates on the final coaching team.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I mean, I just don't think it. But as to your point about Ramsey being sort of a defensive style coach in heart, I think it says something that the New Jersey Devils are sitting and waiting, and apparently, as soon as the opportunity avails themselves, going to hire Craig Ramsey as their head coach if he doesn't get the job in Winnipeg. And we know that the Devils will not play an up-tempo style. They prefer to bore you to death.
Right.
Andrew, I tend to agree with Richie. I think that True North has pretty much gone with the, we're going to bring in our own guys, our own GM, our own coach. They've kept, we read this week that Marcel Como, who's been a Thrasher scout for, I believe, 7 years or 8 years, they're going to obviously keep him on, but they haven't brought in certain players. But members of the previous Thrasher's coaching staff, but I tend to believe that Ramsey still could be a good coach in the NHL. What you heard a lot of this week is how instrumental he was in Tampa Bay's 2004 run.
Definitely.
And the Devils, you know, they need a guy to step in because McLean was a disaster. Lemaire's not interested in coming back.
Lemaire will be back after they fire Craig Ramsey halfway through the season again something. You know,
but
that's to be expected.
But I tend to believe that Ramsey, it was a courtesy interview. Really, I didn't think for a second that Ramsey. I should say that he's going to be the coach. I tend to believe that the short list is Noel, Haviland, McTavish. We're hearing DeBoer, but I don't think so.
We're bound to see, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's save the coaching talk throughout the sort of for the last half of the show. That's where we sort of have it slotted in, because we're going to go deep into it, and we'll take your calls on that as well. But, you know, this segment is really going to be about the Stanley Cup Finals, and we all saw what happened in Vancouver. And we all know that the blame, for whatever reason, has really landed on Roberto Luongo.
Yes.
But to me, how can you really blame your goalie that much when your team scored 8 goals total in 7 games?
They had 5 opportunities to win 2 games, and they didn't. They played They didn't play well in Boston. Luongo didn't play well specifically, but the entire team didn't play well.
They scored 8 goals in 7 games. Yeah. You can't expect your goalie to pitch that, you know, 4 shutouts in the Stanley Cup Finals.
As he's right, they had 5 opportunities, 5 games to win 2.
That's Richie, right. There's actually really not a single player. I mean, healthy or unhealthy. I mean,
nobody's healthy. Nobody's healthy. Playoff time.
But I don't think there's anybody on that Vancouver team that you could specifically say had a good series. Not one player. I think it was a bad. I think Vancouver played poorly at all positions. I really think that there was a couple of players that were probably standouts. I mean, Burrows was good in the beginning of the series. But he was a non-factor. The Sedins weren't a factor really at all in the series.
They were terrible. Yeah. I mean, they were terrible. And you know, credit goes to Zdeno Chara and Dennis Seidenberg, and that obviously plays into it significantly. But they're soft, and that's just their game. And they ended up playing against the guys who were hard to play against. And the truth is when they played against difficult guys to play against, whether it be Weber or Suter for the most, or Chara and Seidenberg. I mean, they just had a lot. They had a very difficult time.
They wilted.
Drew is just I mean, you could argue that, but against San Jose with no shutdown pairing, they dominated the San Jose defense. But when put it to you this way, when asked to change their game, when asked to change their one too many pass game, not really go to the net kind of game, they weren't able to adapt. And that is, to me, says a lot about them. It's not a question about heart. It's not a question about this and that. I'm not questioning that they wanted to win. I hate that stuff. They wanted to win. But they weren't able to adapt their game. You know, and that's one of the things that the great players are able to change their game.
The best players, when you're being shut down on the score sheet, the defense you're matched up against are dominating you, they find ways to contribute in other manners. And these guys did not do that. They just the spotlight was on them. The team needed a goal, and they needed a goal desperately, and they couldn't deliver. And the blame should fall on them more than Luongo in my mind.
It's like the assist they got. I think it was in game 6. You know, on the fancy pass to Lapierre at the end in garbage time. That's because there was nobody cared. There was a ton of space, and that's how they excelled. To me, the picture of the series really is, guys,
Marshawn
punching Sedin in the face 6 times, him not reacting, which was, never mind somebody stepping in. I don't need the whole stepping in business. Stand up for yourself. And Marshawn was, to me, aside from Tim Thomas, and maybe Chara and Seidenberg, the best player in the series.
The biggest problem for the Sedins, before we go to break, and the entire Canucks, from the organization down, is between their eyes. It's their brain. They're mentally weak. This is a mentally weak team in Vancouver, as far as I'm concerned. They couldn't handle any adversity. When the bully punches you in the mouth, you hit him back, and these guys fell to the ground and cried and begged and whimpered and whined, and they couldn't get, and that's why they lost.
I do think there is I completely agree with you, Drew. I think there is a part that they're mentally weak. This is a team that statistically was the best team in the National Hockey League. Most goals, they scored 8 in 7 games.
Offensively. It wasn't even close.
They were allowed a power play because their power play was atrocious.
Yeah.
Atrocious. I mean, words cannot do it justice. How awful, how discombobulated, how terrible they looked from top to bottom.
Think about it this way, Drew. You know, I know we have to go to break here, but Tim Thomas was on a roll. I mean, all year. I mean, that's not even a roll. He's just good.
He's good.
And great. And the thing is, you look at that team and you go, okay, how do you score on a goalie who's really hot? You go to the net, you hit him, you do as much as you can to get in the way. Who on Vancouver's forward group, who amongst that group, goes to the net hard aside from Kessler?
Nobody. Nobody. They didn't make
Burrows.
Yeah, but they didn't make. They made life easy for Tim Thomas. Yeah. He didn't have anybody in front of him. They didn't want to go in front of the net because Thomas was the more aggressive of the player. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You ask any coach, you get inside a goalie's head by crashing the net, by roughing him up a little bit, by knocking him down, by making your presence felt. These guys kept everything to the boards, and any goalie worth his snuff that's playing in the Stanley Cup Finals is going to make the easy saves, and he did.
They were overpassing too. Boston's defense, by the way, is a mean defense, and Vancouver shied away from them.
And Vancouver,
aside from Cabrera, they're mean.
They're weak, mentally weak, weak on the ice in strength. They were not there to win it. They wilted under the pressure.
Usually, I don't want to get too much into that, but I agree with you, Drew. And I think that was demonstrated particularly in the complete and total of their 3 games in Boston.
That's right.
3 games in Boston
and Game 7.
I was, you know, people were talking about before. Even if they won Game 7, the goal differential would have been so predominant, would have been so in favor of Boston that they probably would have been the worst Stanley Cup final champion ever. Like, it was just I couldn't comprehend Vancouver winning the cup
and having been blown out.
In three of the games.
And blown out by Chicago in a couple of games.
That's right.
I mean, a strong team does, that doesn't, I agree, Drew, a strong team that doesn't happen to. Mentally strong. You can't lose those games. You're not losing 8-1, 4-0, and 5-1 or whatever it was, 5-2.
Yeah.
You don't lose those games. Unless you quit.
That's right, and they quit.
Guys, I think you could even say that Vancouver's a really good team that gives up on themselves when they face a little bit of adversity.
Adversity, they shrink. Yeah. They shrink when the spotlight is on them, when the adversity is on them, when it's a little bit hard, they fell by the wayside, and that's a mentally weak team. Let's go to break. When we come back, more on this topic. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Brought to you in part by Superlube Auto Centers. They didn't make the car you drive. They make the car you drive, drive forever.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, where we are mentally tough. We do this each and every week, often with some of us having hangovers. That's where that's the way to give 110%. You show in the studio and you play hurt.
Way to give 110%, Marissa.
Exactly. That's an old school reference for those of you who are confused as to who Marissa is exactly. Ezzy, maybe that can be your nickname. Ezzy Marissa Ginsburg.
I don't think so, Drew.
Yeah, Drew, come on. Okay. 0-1 there.
Yeah, fair enough. But
absolutely,
it was really, you know, it was worth a shot. Going back to our conversation, but after Game 3, we were sitting outside having a beverage. Ezzy was asleep. It was 9 o'clock. But Richie, you were there.
Yes, yes.
You know,
yes.
You were asleep.
Yeah, you were. You bailed on the meeting.
You bailed on the meeting.
What meet? Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I go to bed really early now.
Yeah,
it's pretty depressing.
It is very depressing. We met at 9 o'clock. Quote Ezzy: "Too late for me to show up. I have to be in bed."
Drew, I think you were shocked that you'd ever hear that from me because I used to wake up at 9 o'clock at night.
Yes, that's a separate issue for another day and time. But I messaged
the glory years.
I messaged our good buddy that night.
Four more months.
Our good buddy Gary Lawless that night. I sent him a message. I said Vancouver will lose the series because they're mentally weak.
What do you say?
Because they're fragile.
And Gary responded, "Drew, how did you get my number?"
Exactly. That's exactly what he said, in fact, I believe. But, you know, it's an organizational weakness that they have. Vancouver and their fans talk about this grand conspiracy theory that's against them.
Well, Murdo talked about that. I listened to the Globe podcast this week, and Murdo was talking about how, like, he's writing about Vancouver, and or maybe he was tweeting about it, and James Murdo, the Globe Mail, just for everybody's information. He's from the BC.
Yeah.
He works in for the Globe in Toronto now, and he writes about the Leafs. He says he's never heard so much. He gets so many negative comments where people feel like that the Canucks aren't respected, the Canucks aren't this. They have this, some kind of, yeah, exactly, they have that complex.
That the NHL is out to get them, the media are out to get them. Can you think of one call this year? One call this year that Vancouver can legitimately gripe about?
Really, I thought they got the benefit of the calls in Game 7. Higgins smoked Charlotte at the line, no call. Lapierre hitting with an elbow, I forget who it was that he hit. There was no call. I mean, I thought they got the benefits of the calls in that game.
I think that this organizational conspiracy against them goes, I'll tell you how far it goes back. It goes back to Steve Moore hitting Marcus Naslund.
What was the conspiracy about that?
They thought that Moore didn't get suspended, so there's obviously a conspiracy against them.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, they seem to, and if you ask a Canucks fan, they think that what Todd Bertuzzi did to Steve Moore is okay.
Drew, that's a blanket statement, Drew.
Well, it's a bit of a blanket statement, but you know what? They don't see it as being the reprehensible act that a lot of people saw it as. Oh, Steve Moore, it's the ice's fault for being so hard when he pile-drove Steve Moore's head into it.
Drew, but just getting back to the organizational issue and the team toughness, you know, getting a little bit off of, you know, the Vancouver's, you know, relationship or, you know,
you have
problems with the NHL. Hold on.
Okay.
I think that this year... Let's be honest. This year was the regular season was a perfect year for them. They won the President's Trophy. Well, not a perfect year, but
oh no, was it? They won everything.
They were the best team in hockey.
They were the best team in hockey, and I think that this year, I think they in Vancouver, we know that they did change their approach to the season this year. They were a little bit more relaxed. Luongo, this wasn't an Olympic year for Luongo. This team, Andrew, and another thing about this team is this team has been built since 98, 99 when they drafted the Sedins. This is a team that's been, you know, this is where they should be now, where they're about to win the Stanley Cup. And as far as I'm concerned, getting back to what we were saying in the first segment about how they approach games, they have all of the talent in the world. They even got, you know, Lapierre, Higgins, Malhotra. They had on paper, or whatever you want to call it, on the ice, They are more talented than any other team. And I think the whole problem with Vancouver this year is they didn't prepare themselves for what adversity they would face in the playoffs, such as you meet a defenseman that's shutting down your top players. So how are you going to react? As far as I'm concerned, when Luongo is getting lambasted by your own fans and the other team,
mentally,
who is stepping up in that? Is it Bieksa stepping up in that dressing room and saying, to me, there is a bit of a leadership problem. I think you have some guys on the team that play as individuals. I think Kessler, the way Kessler just looked at the way I interpreted Kessler's body language on the ice in that final, he was
no help. How do you see Eddie, your best player? He's playing on a line with a bunch of fourth liners. Jeff Tambellini is on one side. They're moving in and out other guys. I mean, whether it be Higgins or whoever it may be. I mean, they hoped, obviously, Raymond and Samuelson would be on that line. But regardless of who it was, their depth on the second line wasn't great. And so that's an issue. But let's talk about one thing. I don't think Elaine Vigneault, by the way, built in excuses for the team. I don't think he talks about conspiracy so much. I didn't think so much that he was the issue. Sometimes, Drew, you got to put it on the players' backs. And people certainly have. But you know, you think about Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux, and even Eric Lindros, guys like that, dominant players in their time.
Yeah.
When you're putting them up against the other team's best defenseman, sometimes it's not necessarily all the matchups. It's, hey, you got to outplay the other team's best defenseman.
That's right.
You're the best player. I mean,
Sedin are better than Dennis Seidenberg.
Exactly. Now, Seidenberg has been glorified. I like Seidenberg. I generally have. He's a good skater. He moves the puck pretty well. He's built like a truck.
He's not Scott Stevens, though.
Exactly.
He's not Jay Weber.
Sometimes he has bad decision-making. Sometimes he doesn't make the best puck decisions. He gets caught out of position. He is a good defenseman.
Plays well with Chara.
But not a great one. Exactly. Take advantage of it.
Are you telling me? I mean, at the beginning of the series, do you not think that the Boston Bruins had a built-in strategy?
Yes.
From the start, they said,
absolutely.
We can punch Vancouver in the nose,
absolutely.
And they will fall by the wayside.
Other people think that, though. If you listen to other NHLers, whether it be management or players, people believe that. People
they
believe
think
in
that
Vancouver's soft.
That the organization is soft.
Right, Drew.
From top to bottom. You have the owner after Game 7. The owner coming
say,
into the dressing room telling the media to go F off. To go F themselves. You have them. The owner of the team is coming into the dressing room and telling the media that. The media don't play the game. The media didn't do anything. The media didn't cause you guys to lose. Your players caused you to lose.
And it's about the approach, too. You see the way Tim Thomas handles the media? In that calm, cool style, what me worry.
Yeah.
Roberto Luongo looks like everything is being taken personally. And if that's the case, guys, either they have to shield him from the media, not shield him, he has to do the interviews, but shield himself from the media in terms of reading and all that stuff, or they have to do a better job of insulating him within that team.
Somebody needs to step up on that team, face the media to put the pressure right on their shoulders and respond.
Some do that, Drew.
On
Bieksa
that team,
did that. Kessler did that. Didn't get enough help.
Well, whose fault is that if he didn't get enough help? Why don't you put a line out there of the Sedins and Kessler if you're desperate for the first goal?
They also have a lot of Marchand is a talker on Boston, but he backed it up. They have a lot of talkers. Lapierre's a talker. Burrows is a talker. A lot of talkers who had some goals. Lapierre had a winning goal and Burrows had two winning goals, right?
Yeah.
But
when
did Burrows score the winning goal in game one?
I don't remember, but it does. I mean, look, they barely won. They desperately won.
Toronto scored the winning goal.
Yeah, they barely won those games. Boston went out there and dominated them in the games that they won.
I mean, give Gillis credit, guys. He came out yesterday or 2 days ago and said, hey, the better team won the series. And that's what happened.
And, and that's what happened. And unfortunately, what became ugly, what was, as far as the actual series goes, not the ridiculousness with the riot and all that.
We're
talking about
the riot next
segment. The ridiculousness of what they were saying is they looked like they were defeated, in my opinion, after game four. Game three, everything changed. After game two, as far as I'm concerned, Richie, the Wayne Gretzky in 2002 moment, everyone remembers when Wayne Gretzky put everything on him and said, hey, basically, let's go out and win this
in
the
press conference. He took the pressure off the players.
But hold on, I just want to say one thing, Richie. I think that Tim Thomas, when he was getting basically criticized after the game, when people are saying, oh, some people have said that, you got to change your coaching style
goaltending style
after he let in that wraparound goal on Burrows. And then he said, it's worked for me fine. Well, when it ended up happening, he won four of the next five games, including two shutouts.
The problem with Luongo is, and I've always liked Luongo, unfortunately, is an insecure goaltender, and that's a bad position to be insecure in.
Can you
Patrick Waugh was get the hell out of my way. I don't care if you think I suck. I'm great.
That's right.
And
he had the confidence to do
it. He was cocky. He was cocky as could be. Dominic Hasek? Cocky.
Yeah.
Either you have to be a what-me-worry in the line of not only probably the best what-me-worry goalie is not Tim Thomas. Marty Brodeur has always been, whatever. All right, so Grant Fuhr apparently was the best at that. Didn't remember his bad games. Didn't care. You have to have the confidence in yourself to not let it bother you. Roberto Luongo, unfortunately, does not have that confidence.
You have to be a closer in baseball. Closer in baseball can go 12 straight games, never give up a hit. Then he comes in for his 13th game, gets blown out of the yard, blows the save for the team. Next game, he can go. He has to be back there the next day, within 12 hours, and have to do it all over again and turn his brain off from what happened the day before.
Well, I thought it was his line was telling when he said, When Berlalong was saying, Tim Thomas hasn't been pumping my tires this series, and Tim Thomas, responded by saying, I didn't know it was my job to pump his tires. The point's this. Roberto Luongo was clearly thinking, I'm talking up Tim Thomas, trying to be respectful. Tim Thomas isn't talking me up.
Why would he?
But the point is that he wanted that kind of security. Unfortunately, guys, it became very transparent. They were very transparent in the fact that he is a little bit insecure, and with that insecurity, you have to understand something, guys. When there's an insecurity that's that obvious to the general public, what do you guys think being said on the ice? What do you think Sean Thornton said to him before Game 6?
They're destroying his confidence even more. They see a weakness in their opponent, they go after it. That's what you do to win the series.
That's like Sun Tzu said, Drew.
Can you imagine in the warm up? That they were taking shots on him?
Shot the goal and then mouthed him off and nobody stood
up for him. And they ran into him and they gave him an elbow? If I'm one of the Vancouver players, a skater on Vancouver, and they're touching my goalie in the warm-up, I'm destroying them.
Let's talk about that. Let's go through
Vancouver. Let's go to break. Let's go to break and come back to that. Okay. We got to go to break and come back to that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and Vancouver Canucks Psychiatrist Hour. I am your host, Drew Mindell. Am I also your head shrink, or are you guys the head shrink?
You can be the head shrink today, Drew.
I can be the head shrink? Okay, fair enough.
You're in the pool.
I don't get it.
You're in the deep end, Drew.
Shrink end. Shrinkage.
Oh.
Okay.
Nice. Thanks. That slipped past me there, Jake.
I was in the pool. Okay, anyways. Before we went to break, we were talking about the Vancouver Canucks team, and I wanted to go through the lines to kind of talk about the team toughness overall.
Okay.
Boston's a team that you have, you have guys like Marchand who don't back down, Milan Lucic, Horton, when obviously he was healthy. The whole defense is pretty tough as a whole, aside from Thomas Caberle. You have a lot of pieces in place that don't back down. Mark Recchi, I thought it was very telling again that, after the Lapierre biting incident in game one, Burroughs. Yeah. Burroughs biting incident, how they kept sticking the fingers in the faces of the Vancouver Canucks. I thought it was interesting.
They knew that they couldn't handle it.
Let me get to the lines. You have Sedin and Burroughs. I mean, how many of those guys are really tough and going to go at a goalie and go at the other team? Not really. Look at the second line, whoever may be based on injuries, but just, say Tambellini. Kessler will go at you. Kessler will do some things, and then you look at some other players on the team. Hansen. And Hansen played hard. Oreskovich didn't bring much to the table. Lapierre's all talk, no action. Mahotra was playing with one eye. Higgins isn't exactly Mr. Physical. Tanner Glass doesn't back down, but he plays minimal minutes. Torres is a tough guy, so he brings something to the table. But then you look at their back end. Erhoff was awful in this series, just dreadful. Salo's never been a guy who's known for his toughness. Tanev's the first, as a rookie. Andrew Alberts is tough if he can skate there. Edler and Bieksa aren't easy to play against, so you have some toughness there. But overall, it's not a very tough team. And the problem is, guys, we talk about matchups. This was a matchup, Ezzy, that it was Vancouver against a team that was going to run over. And that was a bad matchup for Vancouver. They played Tampa, they beat them in 5 or 6.
They knew, and Boston knew that they could get into their heads easily. I mean, Boston, Boston punched you in the face.
Literally.
They literally punched them in the face. Vancouver bit them. I think that says it all.
That's very well put.
If you're the team, how can you take, you can't respect or fear the team that to prove their toughness is biting you.
Don't fear the Reaper, Drew.
They couldn't handle it. I want to get on to the conspiracy part of it.
What conspiracy?
Well, the JFK? Why do the Canucks have this?
They're a second biter?
There was a second biter. Why do the Canucks have this, where does it stem from, this mentality that everybody's out to get the Canucks? The NHL head office is out to get the Canucks.
Well, Drew,
you saw the reception that Gary Bettman got.
Yeah, that was intense.
It was classy.
It was
Very classy.
Shameful.
They were throwing stuff at him.
They
were
almost hit him. They were shameful. But
he looked scared.
Well,
I don't blame him.
I don't blame him. It was an angry crowd. And that's what caused the problems after the game.
It's really bad when you're more safe in Philly last year than you are in Vancouver.
You know, that was the problem. That's what caused all the problems afterwards is the anger. And that anger is, for whatever reason, the Canucks seem to think that everybody is out to get them. And I can't even point to one incident. To one incident throughout the series, throughout the year, throughout the last couple years, because it's certainly not just a this year thing, that would give the Canucks justification for believing that there's a conspiracy against them.
That's fair.
Can you think of one thing?
No,
not really.
No, but I think that there are many incidents dating back to the Moore incident that would maybe, I'm not rationalizing it, Drew, but of all of the incidents that have happened, I mean, we're going back to last year. How about this last year, too, when Alexander Burrows and there was the whole referee controversy. I forget the name of the referee.
O'Shea. Stephane O'Shea.
This isn't justification, but they've been involved in a lot of...
Vancouver, that's what they do, they whine.
The Vancouver Canucks have had a bit of a, let's say, a swagger about the team. And
but I don't think they have, Ezzy. That's my point. If you have a swagger, you have an air of confidence. You can go out and you can dominate whatever adversity is in your way.
What they are is they're the cocky guy who walks up in the bar and then you actually test him and he falls apart.
That's right. That's right. When push comes to shove, they melt away. And let me tie that in, this anger and this conspiracy. That was an angry crowd at Rogers Arena in Vancouver
It was also a very quiet crowd.
Silent.
Yeah, by the way, can we talk about the fact that they were louder cheering Milan Lucic than they were any time during the game? The Go Canucks Go, where was that? Did anybody hear that chant? We want the cup. Did anybody hear any chants? Like, when you had Jets games in Winnipeg, during the game it was loud as can be. Boston crowd was so much louder than that Vancouver crowd.
Yeah, it was a shameful display because it was an angry vibe in the arena.
Would you agree
with that? It seemed to be an angry vibe into the arena?
It was a vibe waiting for the shoe to drop.
That's right. So you got an angry vibe in the arena. It's only safe to assume that once Boston took that lead, that angry vibe is in the streets of Vancouver.
Yeah.
And that starts from the organization down. So the organization says we're being conspired against. They have it out for us. We're angry. We're angry. We're angry. And then you send 150,000 angry people onto the streets. No wonder things start getting burnt.
Let's talk about the rioting because what we've heard is conflicting reports as to who was responsible for it.
The Vancouver police or the mayor or whatever said it was organized anarchists. To some extent, there was probably some organized anarchists.
Isn't organized anarchist, Drew, another way of saying stupid people?
Of course it is. It goes without saying that they're stupid.
Of course.
And so the Vancouver police and the Vancouver mayor would have you believe it was organized anarchists that were responsible for this. It wasn't real Canucks fans, quote unquote. I'm sorry. The guy who was burning the police car that everybody saw was a member of the Canadian National Water Polo Team, the junior team. He was on a scholarship to the University of Calgary. He's the son of a surgeon from Burnaby. That is not an organized anarchist. That is a rich kid who's wealthy, who was just being a jerk, who was an angry jerk.
The Winklevoss? The Winklevoss?
The Winklevosses? He may have been a Winklevoss.
Drew, it's quite possible that there were a few anarchists that do this on a daily basis, which is really depressing.
Of course.
But let's be honest. There was
G9.
There was tens of thousands of people, and a lot of them, regardless of what they do in their spare time, they were just people that were drunk or stupid, and they got caught up in a riot. It was a riot, and I mean, we don't have to be PhDs in psychology to know that when there's a riot, usually rational thought can be thrown out the window, in Vancouver's case, burned into a window.
There is the concept of mob mentality and everything else. I get that. But to say that this wasn't, the average Canucks fan, and I don't want to paint them all with a brush. Let me get that on the record. I don't want to paint them all with a brush.
Because you're not a great artist.
But there were certainly some people there who were the quote-unquote average Canucks fan.
Oh, because they thought they could get away with it. I love people who posted it on their Facebook.
Yeah, well, they're beyond stupid. Just beyond. Words doesn't do them justice how stupid they are. But to say that it was organized anarchists and only organized anarchists, and this isn't reflective of the Vancouver fan, and we are ashamed and everything else. No. The organization has to hold some of this responsibility for feeding into the mentality of a conspiracy and the anger that the crowd brought onto the streets of Vancouver after Game 7.
There weren't enough cops mobilized either, Drew.
Yes, there's certainly fault that has to lie with the authorities. Don't get me wrong. There's plenty of blame to go on here. But at some point in time, the owner of the Canucks coming into the dressing room and dropping F-sharps left, right, and center feeds into this anger that everybody has, and anger breeds resentment. Alcohol thrown in there causes police cars to be set on fire, causes the stupidity that we saw in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And to say that, to blame it on these anarchists, quote-unquote, whoever they are, is a fallacy that really the authorities in Vancouver should be ashamed about doing.
Drew, there was, I mean, I know you're passionate about it, but it was a very unfortunate situation. And I think one of the journalists that really did a really nice piece on it was Ian Hanna-Mansing of CBC. He was there in 1994. Everyone remembers, the Rangers beat the Canucks in Game 7, Pavel Bure, Mike Richter, all that. And there was a riot back then, Drew. Mm-hmm. That was 18 years ago, 17 years ago. And the unfortunate thing for me, and Ian Hanna-Mansing really covered this, and he was talking to, there were studies done by university professors on what the police could have done better. And what's unfortunate is there wasn't enough police, and they didn't establish safe areas. What basically happened, and I agree with you. Organized anarchists aren't responsible for the actions of 20,000 people. I just want to say one thing. I don't think that this riot is reflective on Vancouverites or Vancouver fans, but to some extent it is.
Perception is reality. And clearly those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat
it. Hi, Sigmund Freud.
But you know what? I don't know many anarchists who walk around wearing Canucks jerseys. And all the people, a lot of the people you saw burning and throwing things in the fire and egging people on.
Yeah, bandwagoners too.
Of course.
Anarchists wear Leafs jerseys.
Oh, my mistake. Look, I was in Vancouver last year for the Olympics. I was there for it, and the vibe in the city was one of pleasure. It was one of joy.
Utopia.
It was one of
fruitopia.
It was one of happiness. It was one of, we're excited to be here and we want to show off our city.
Yep.
It was not anger. When the vibe is anger and it starts from the top down, then that's where the problem is. And I believe that part of the brunt of the responsibility lies with Aquilino, the Vancouver Canucks.
Aquilino.
It lies with that organization and this continuing feeding into the theory that we're being conspired against by somebody in the NHL head office. It's nonsense, and it's partly what's responsible for the fires and everything else that we saw in Vancouver.
Drew, you're right.
On that note, let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Riot would ever happen in Winnipeg?
No.
No?
No.
Not at all. I really don't.
I tend to
have a complex
here.
You could score a goal in a playoff game and we could get swept and lose every game 5-0 in the last game 5-1.
And just be happy that we made the playoffs.
Yeah, happy we made the playoffs.
You know, a lot of people...
We might have a parade if we ever win a series.
Drew, a lot of people talk about, you know, how people are laid back in the West Coast. You know, well, they aren't.
Nice. The Boston Bruins parade is going on right now. So if you go to illegalcurve.com, I believe the link to the parade is there. Remus in the R desk will post it. So go to www.illegalcurve.com. Join Michael Remus in the chat that's going on. Hockey fans around the world gather to talk hockey every Saturday morning on illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And you can always send us your comments and whatnot on Twitter @illegalcurve. Boys, the season is done. It's June 15th.
No, it's not. It's June 18th.
Right. The season ended on June 15th, right?
Sorry.
Thank you. But it's time to...
Richie, did Drew just end the season officially?
Yeah, I did. Like 3 days ago?
It's appropriate now that we look back on some of our predictions from throughout the course of the year.
Ooh. We're going to put predictions out in the beginning of the year. Might as well review them at the end.
Might as well review them. Ezra Ginsberg, we'll start with you. Western Conference champions in the regular season. So the winner of the first overall seed in the Western Conference, Ezra Ginsberg, predicted the Vancouver Canucks.
Ooh.
Well done, Ezra.
Hey now.
How clairvoyant.
Eastern Conference number one overall seed, Washington Capitals.
Oh, he did 2-for-2.
And then it sort of fell
just
by
get
the
way. Just to my cup picks, though.
Yeah, it fell by the wayside at this point in time. Well, the second pick's not bad. The Stanley Cup champion, as you had the Los Angeles Kings.
That was pretty... Oh, wait.
Yeah. Stanley Cup runner-up, the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, so got they close. Got into the top four. Not bad.
Not bad, not
they're,
bad.
They're a few seasons away, Drew.
The Conn Smythe MVP of the playoffs. Drew Doughty of the Los Angeles Kings.
He had a good first round.
That's good. He wasn't up for the... He wasn't quite the...
Actually, sorry, he had one good game. Remember, he had the four-point game.
That's right. One good game
doesn't get you a Conn Smythe, yeah, exactly. So we're going to go with that was a terrible pick.
One good game does not a Conn Smythe make. The rest of the predictions are generally based on...
regular season.
On the awards.
So let's go over that after.
After the awards ceremony.
No, let's talk about it before.
Are we going to Vegas for that?
Are you? I don't know.
I want to go with Constant Velvet.
Let's go over our picks here.
Okay. Let's go to, yours truly.
You had a couple good picks.
Well, this is Drew first.
This is me first. Western Conference champions, the Chicago Blackhawks.
Terrible
pick. Not a great pick.
Finished eighth.
Eastern Conference champion, this is all during the regular season, the Washington Capitals.
All right, 1-for-2.
Okay, that's not bad, not too bad. Stanley Cup runner-up, the Detroit Red Wings.
Terrible.
Yeah, didn't quite do it for me there. Stanley Cup champions, though, the Boston Bruins.
Hey now. Pretty good.
That's a very good pick. Yeah. Dude, and I got to give you credit for
I had Chara for the Conn Smythe.
Pretty good.
Not too bad. Yeah. Not too bad. Probably second there.
He was probably third after Thomas and Marchand.
You couldn't pick Thomas before the year because Rask entered the year as a starter.
That's right. So, but not too shabby.
It was good work.
Let's go to Richard Pollock.
Oh, boy.
Western Conference champion during the regular season, the Vancouver Canucks.
Yep.
So, nicely done.
Easy,
an easy one. Eastern Conference champion during the regular season.
Penguins?
The Washington Capitals.
Okay.
I know.
There you go. But three on that one.
Rich, you picked the Penguins.
You're giving it away. It's going to get to that.
What? I'm building up anticipation.
Build it up.
Stanley Cup runner-up for Richard Pollock at the beginning of the season with the Vancouver Canucks. Nicely done. Stanley Cup champions, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
And I still contest, by the way, that
huge
if they were healthy, they would have won the Cup.
Huge Penguins are running the Cup next year, and I know H-Bomb's going to be happy to hear that.
Only if they
Penguins
get,
are still a dynasty, Drew.
Only if they get some guy named Crosby back, and he doesn't get
and
hit.
And Malkin.
Oh, he'll be back. And Malkin. He'll be back wearing those RBK skates that he loves.
Conn Smythe winner, you had Sidney Crosby. Usually a reasonable pick.
Yeah.
Let's go to our good buddy Kyle Cozier.
Okay.
Western Conference champions during the regular season, the Detroit Red Wings.
I thought Kyle took the Oilers.
The Red Wings finished third.
Yeah. So, good. Eastern Conference champion, the Wasps.
They finished third or fourth?
They finished third.
3-6. Right?
Yeah, they beat Phoenix. Eastern Conference champions during the regular season, the Washington Capitals.
We all picked the Capitals. Wow.
Yeah, apparently we all went to, it seemed like a pretty good bet.
Regular season team.
Yeah, exactly. Stanley Cup champion, Detroit Red Wings. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a bit of a reach, Kyle.
Stanley Cup runner-up, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
That would have been 3 out of 4 years at the same final, right?
Yeah. And the Conn Smythe, he had Nick Lidstrom of the Detroit Red Wings. Okay. So,
Kyle's not on the next segment anymore.
Yeah, Kyle, you've been bumped. You've been bumped. Remus, why don't we have your predictions?
Well, we asked Remus to put together some things, and he just fell asleep.
There's no prediction. Well, we'll find out where Remus's predictions are. Let's go through some of the forward who will disappoint the most.
Yeah.
This is from Ezra Ginsberg. You chose Martin Havlat of the Minnesota Wild.
I think that's probably a pretty good pick.
Didn't he lead the team in scoring, though?
That's not saying much when you have 61 points.
That's
or whatever.
Fair enough.
I had for my forward who will disappoint the most, Patrick Kane.
He's pretty good, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was okay. Richie, the player who will disappoint the most, Patrick Marleau.
Marleau didn't have a great year.
Wasn't great.
But
wasn't great.
I'm checking right now what his final stat line was.
Kyle Cozier, forward who will disappoint the most, Ilya Kovalchuk.
Very good.
I think that's a win. That's a win for Kyle. Kyle, you're back on next segment.
He was good this year.
Put it on the board.
Yeah. He had 12 points.
Ezra Ginsberg, forward who will surprise the most, Logan Couture, San Jose Sharks.
Not bad.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Who do we have?
Forward who will surprise the most for yours truly, Nathan Horton.
He's all right. He's a surprise, but yeah.
Better in the playoffs.
If you count the playoffs, that's a pretty good pick.
Richie, forward who will surprise the most, Alex Tange.
He was good this year.
Yeah. Pretty good.
He's now about to be overpaid by a team that has no salary cap room.
Hey, when you consider, triple his point total this year, Richie?
Marleau had 10 points less this year than last year, but I don't say, I wouldn't, he had 37 goals, so I would not be victorious in that one.
I'm afraid that Kyle's back off the show next segment.
Oh, why?
Forward who will surprise the most, Mike Modano.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kyle, you're out.
Kyle,
see you later. See you at the draft.
Who's next?
Next, defenseman who will disappoint the most, Ezra Ginsberg, Dion Phaneuf.
Well, had a good second half, but yes, that's fair.
Drew Mandel, defenseman who will disappoint the most, Jay Bouwmeester.
He's all right.
He's fine.
Probably played within his, you know.
So, yeah. The thing with Bouwmeester is he hasn't had the offensive totals in Calgary to justify the contract.
I think he's playing that poorly this year.
Richard Pollock, defenseman who will disappoint the most. You remember who you picked?
No. Nope.
Jeff Schultz.
Yeah, he was terrible.
Who?
Yeah, Jeff Schultz was a top plus-minus guy in the NHL the year before and played with Mike Green, and everybody was overhyping him because plus-minus is an overhyped stat. And he came to this year, and he was an average four defenseman at the most. People were, you know, the guy's not a great puck mover. He's not very fast. People might know him from the Burmistrov goal that he gets undressed on. And he's, I don't know what his plus-minus was this year, but it wasn't plus 50. So there you go.
Kyle Cozier, defenseman who will disappoint the most, Dion Phaneuf.
Okay. Great minds think alike.
Or something like that. Ezra Ginsberg, the defenseman who will surprise the most, John Carlson, Washington Capitals.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Who'd you have, Drew?
I had Victor Hedman.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Still a work in progress.
You had, so I guess surprise. I guess surprisingly bad could be a good example here. Keith Ballard.
Yeah, he's terrible.
Yeah.
I like Keith Ballard, he was terrible.
And
that was a bad one for me.
Yeah. Kyle had Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Who? He was back and forth with the minors in Phoenix.
Yeah, he may have done well in
I guess, why did you guys win that one?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Ezra Ginsberg, goaltender who will disappoint the most.
I remember who that was, and I was wrong, Carey Price.
That is right. You were very wrong.
You bailed off the support truck.
I bailed on that one pretty hard.
I went with Kerry Lehtinen.
Tyler did disappoint. He played pretty well.
He was pretty good. Yeah, he was pretty good.
So far, 0-2.
Yeah, it's not a so far.
Who did I have?
Jonas Gustafsson.
He's terrible.
He definitely the disappointed.
Who did Kyle have?
Yeah, Kyle went with Nikolai Habibulin. It's pretty terrible.
Yeah, DUI.
That's not bad.
Was a DUI involved?
Was that last summer?
That was like two summers. No, it was like three years ago or something.
It was me last night.
Yeah, exactly.
Terrible. Don't joke about that.
Let's go. Ezra, goalie who will surprise the most. Jonathan Bernier.
He didn't play.
Didn't play enough.
That's a loss. I went with who did I go with here? I went with Antero Nedimaki. Yeah,
he lost the job kind of halfway through.
Mm-hmm. Richie, you went with Andrei Pavlich, our new starting goaltender.
He was good.
I like that.
Yeah, he was good.
Top 15 save percentage this year.
I like Pavlich a lot.
And goalie who will surprise the most, Kyle Cozier. He's back on the show. Carey Price.
You know.
Let's go back up here. We have the rookie who will disappoint the most, Ezra Ginsberg.
I think I said PRV, right?
You did say PRV.
He wasn't very good this year.
He wasn't as good as people thought he'd be. He wasn't terrible, though.
Yeah.
No.
I went with Corey Hodgson.
Cody Hodgson.
Sorry, it says Cody there. I'm illiterate now.
It's okay, Drew. Your favorite player is Mark Keane, so.
Yeah.
I went with Cody Hodgson.
Okay.
Pretty good there.
Yeah.
Thank you. Richie, you remember who you went with?
No.
Lars Eller.
I didn't think he was very good this year. He was overhyped. He was the player they acquired for Halleck.
Yeah. And Kyle went with Michael Backlund.
He had his moments.
It's funny because I said that he would be well, you'll get to it in a second.
But yeah,
Backlund would be good this year, and he wasn't.
And moments. To round off this this category, the rookie who will surprise the most, Ezra Ginsberg.
Yeah, I said Backlund.
Michael Backlund.
I win this one. I remember who I picked.
Yeah, you won this one.
Jeff Skinner?
Down. Yeah. Well, you're skipping me. I went with Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Yeah, he was very bad.
Yeah, pretty bad. Richie, like you said, you went with Jeff Skinner. So, you know, that was a pretty good prediction, I'd say. Pretty good. And Kyle, Tyler Ennis.
Ennis was good also.
Very good.
Yeah.
Turned it on in the second half and in the playoffs.
That's right.
Hey, there were some good picks there.
Not bad.
There were some, it's a mixed pack. It's a mixed bag.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, it's a potpourri.
I think people listening would say, hey, those guys sort of know what they're talking about.
And the truth is we have to tell you, because so many people make predictions and never talk about them again.
That's right. We're going to throw ourselves on the stake if we make our bold
predictions. We'll throw you on the stake. We'll eat a steak. We'll cook a steak. Yeah. We'll cook you a steak. Whatever.
22-ouncer.
We talk about our bold predictions, and we have to throw these bold predictions back in our face when they blow up in our face. Yeah. So, we're honest here at the Illegal Curve Hockey
Show. That's right.
Not anything. What do you say we go to break, and when we come back, we'll have Kyle on?
Tell him Mike Modano might come back next year.
That's right. Exactly. Modano might play next year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go.
Drew, nice sweater.
Thank you.
It's a nice crisp. Nice Christmas sweater, Drew.
You gonna pull on my thread? Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go.
That's it.
Anyways, I think we have Remus. Do we have Kyle on the line?
I have one more prediction to make.
Okay.
Drew will get the Greek omelet for lunch.
It's probably a reasonable prediction. You'll get it too, though, so it's not like you're throwing me under the bus here or anything. You know, you enjoy
let's
that.
Let's go to the phone.
Okay.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head to Grand Forks, North Dakota, where our good friend, the Illegal Curve scouting correspondent, Kyle Kozier, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks, guys. How's it going?
Good, Kyle. How you doing? Getting ready for a big weekend in Minneapolis next weekend?
I am all ready to roll.
Are you going to be able to handle spending an entire weekend with Ezra and Remus?
Yeah, it's actually fine. I've notified the St. Paul PD, and we've got a police escort the whole time.
And Kyle, and the thing is, we're all going to have separate hotel rooms on different floors, so... I mean, we'll go to the draft, but after the draft, we're not going to talk to each other, right? So,
I think that's the best thing, basically. Let's just treat it like we're all Hollywood moguls here. And yeah. Just smile for the cameras and go our separate ways afterwards. I'm really too important to hang out with you guys. So
that seems to make a lot of sense. Kyle, let's start with now. Hang on, before we get into the draft talk, Kyle, you're a longtime Oilers fan. I just want to clarify: are you going to still be an Oilers fan, or are you going to become a Winnipeg Whatevers fan?
Still an Oilers fan.
I think I'll go 1A and 1AA, and I'm not going to let you guys know which one's which.
Okay, that's reasonable.
I can't turn down the proximity.
Yeah.
It's tough to overcome, 25-plus years with one team. It's just like an abusive relationship, Getting that first foot out the door is always the hardest.
Well, it looks like we're going to be off the air by next Saturday, so Kyle, we appreciate that. Kyle, let's start with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. It sounds like he's going to be the first overall pick for the Oilers, most likely. What does he bring to the table as a young rookie?
Well, obviously, he brings that... I guess one thing that the Oilers lack is a offensive-type centerman. Everyone keeps talking about, I guess the recurring theme that keeps coming up when people talk about him is his on-ice vision. You know what I mean? There's whispered notions that he's reminds people of Wayne Gretzky with his vision. So that's really something that the Oilers could use. They've got a couple young wingers there in Hall and Eberle that can score a lot, but really kind of lack the centerman to get him the puck on a consistent basis. They've tried Gagne with him, and he does okay, but I think... Nugent Hopkins obviously has that much better of a sense of flair, I guess, if you want to say. And again, you really can't deny the vision, but I guess there obviously are concerns, too, about his size. They have a lot of smallish-type forwards, and he certainly fits in with that bunch. So certainly something to think about. There are a lot of Oilers fans that maybe suggest sticking with the centerman but getting somebody a little bigger. But, it's really tough. You can't teach the offensive skill, so I guess for that matter, you can't teach the size either. So it'll be interesting to see which way they go.
Kyle, people always debate whether you pick the best player available or need, and I guess the question would be then is Adam Larson still in consideration? Because you could argue, the Oilers have a ton of needs because Steve Tambolini's done a really good job of keeping them terrible, but do you think that their need is a bigger need at center or on defense? And break down, the Larson versus Hopkins or whatever it may be, mindset?
I think if you want to talk about need there, I think it's really an equal type of need. In addition to needing actual NHL players, they certainly need some defense to come into that program. They have some prospects on the back end, but nobody that's really kind of taking the bull by the horns. You look at the recent examples of guys that sort of graduated from prospect to NHL players, sort of guys like Theo Pekham were really more stay-at-home guys. So in that sense, Larson would give him that future number one defenseman / power play quarterback / big minute eater.
Right.
That they somewhat lack. I guess you can argue Ryan Whitney's there and he's not that old, but he's had history of injury problems. Both his feet are somewhat suspect, so you have to wonder how long he'll be there. And, if they're finally ready to compete, will he be still an Oiler or long gone? So I guess that's what kind of gives him, might give me pause when I got to the podium, because Larson would certainly fill that need. But then again, you also have to wonder if sort of a good rule of thumb is it takes the defenseman sort of longer to be NHL ready. I realize Larson's been playing in sort of the men's league in Sweden, but does he come over and adjust to the North American game right away? Do you throw a young defenseman into sort of a bad situation there where you're going to get beat most nights and, you know what I mean, things aren't going all that well for you. So, and I think the Oilers, too, the, I guess if you look most recently, I think they feel, I guess with the exception of PRV, I really think they feel comfortable drafting kids from either the Western League or from closer to home, especially with that number one pick, that you really can't afford to make a mistake there.
Right.
And not that Larson would be a mistake, but you know, there are some questions as to whether or not he would be a true number one defenseman or just sort of a complimentary two or three guy. So it's certainly something to think about, but my guess is they still lean towards Hopson there.
Kyle, a lot of hockey fans have heard about Jonathan Huberdeau, who's moved up the rankings, played for St. John. Who maybe talk about what you think about Huberdeau and where he's currently ranked. I think he's currently ranked fourth overall. I was just going to say, what do you think about Huberdeau, and do you think he'll go in the top four? And also, who's the draft pick, maybe aside from Huberdeau, who is rising up the draft charts?
I think that, you know, Huberdeau, obviously, you know, you look at the long Memorial Cup run that he had there, and I think that often kind of plays a role in where a guy ends up getting ranked and where they end up getting taken. I guess if you want to, just to compare and contrast, you know, we've known about Ryan Nugent Hopkins for a long time, you know what I mean? And so that basically, you know, if you go into the draft, say, with even Nugent Hopkins and Larson, you go into the draft thinking, well, they're probably 1-2. So I can, you know, both scouts and media people and even probably NHL teams, like a whole year to pick holes in their game. But Huberdeau, you know, kind of came into the year hanging around sort of the middle of the pack, you know, probably a first round or maybe mid to late round. But, I mean, he had such a great run in the Memorial Cup that, you know, big sentiment really kind of put the team on his back at times and was just a force at both ends of the ice. So, I mean, it's just sort of like the new thing out there, which I think somewhat reflects his rapid rise off the charts. Certainly a great player, but then you have to wonder, you know, I mean, if given even another month or two of regular play, would you start to find holes in his game? Mm-hmm. Would the luster come off a little bit? So that's sort of, I guess, an interesting thing to think about. And in terms of a riser, a guy that might go a lot higher than people expect is Jamie Oleksiak, the defenseman from Northeastern, one of those interesting type of guys in that he could sort of have the decision to make whether or not he's going to play for the U.S. or Canada in the upcoming World Juniors. I know he didn't get invited to Canada's camp, and the U.S. didn't invite him, so that might answer the question. But giant defenseman, 6'7", big shot, mean streak, can play an offensive style of game. And so I think with the recent success of Boston, and especially Zay and Ochara in the playoffs here, I think a lot of teams would have trouble passing on a big specimen like that.
Well, Kyle, I was just going to quickly say that sounds like Tyler Myers. The way you're describing him, Tyler Myers, and there was the Canadian-U.S. thing too, right?
Yeah, same type of deal from Calgary, played fans from Dallas, that type of deal, very similar situation. Considers Toronto home, but he started playing minor hockey with Little Caesars in Detroit. Started in minor midget, I think, and then, of course, played in the USHL Chicago for a while. So, interesting situation. I know he didn't get the invite to Canada's camp, so that might end up feeling it, but interesting prospect all the same.
Kyle, we're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Kyle Cozier, our Illegal Curve scouting correspondent. Kyle, on the flip side, who's falling down some teams' draft boards right now?
You know, you hear a lot about a guy like Tyler Biggs, another USHL player from the national development team there. Big guy, kind of plays a gritty game, doesn't bring a lot of offense. Early on, and this, you know, as early as maybe 18 months, or as late as 18 months, when people were talking about him as a potential, he's maybe a top 10 pick. But I guess just using memory here, and I don't want to be unfair to the fellow, but kind of reminds me of like a Colton Gillies, like the guy that, you know, the Minnesota Wild took pretty high. But, I mean, you have to question, do you take that sort of gritty two-way winger, third-line winger type with a, you know, with a first-round pick? So that's the guy I think that might fall off a little bit. And an interesting one that's really fallen, I guess, if going back to Canada here, is David Musia from the Vancouver Giants. Is I don't know if you guys remember, but last year he was sort of projected as a, maybe he's a top 10, but, you know, a lot of lists and a lot of rankings now actually see him often in the 20s and out of the first round altogether. Again, stay-at-home pick defenseman, not going to bring any offense to the table, but, you know, so you wonder, where did that top 10 ranking come? Did it come because, you know, is the son of an NHLer? Or did people, again, you know, identify him early and then spend a whole year, year and a half picking holes in this game. So kind of an interesting interesting guy to look at. And I guess for our third guy, Brandon Saad from Saginaw Spirit, he was a started playing in the North American League as a 16-year-old and tore it up and then sort of ruffled feathers at USA Hockey by moving to the Ontario Hockey League. And again, he's really fallen off the map. Again, I remember him being talked about at the top five pick. And now, again, you see him at the end of the first round or end of the second round. So that's three guys that are really kind of taking a nosedive. Or could take a farther dive, too.
Interesting. Tambellini's talked about possibly shopping the pick. I mean, he seems to have done this last year, too, with the same posturing. What do you see that pick being traded, or any other teams maybe hopping into the top five or six?
I really think so. Just, you know, you hear a lot of guys talking, especially general managers, not talking about, you know, there's no real game changer here. So I guess you have to take that slightly with a grain of salt because it could be just some gamesmanship, you know, guys trying to make other GMs blink or guess. It's just like a big poker game, who's going where, especially because there's not really a, you know, for all the talk we've had about Nugent Hopkins, there's not really a clear-cut number one guy. And especially, you know, if in the in that top 10, if your guy's gone, you don't really see a lot of, you know, if you just don't see what you like, I mean, especially on draft day, I think there's always it's a good day to get an overpay, I guess is what I'm trying to spit out here. So, yeah, I certainly see a lot of movement there, and I know you see a lot of stories that Tambellini's calling around. So if you find the right partner there, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, even a team like Columbus, I know a lot of talk about, you know, Scott Housen sent him on the hot seat to get his team into the playoffs. So I would not be surprised if that pick is dealt. And if the Oilers decide to keep it, I know they also kind of covet getting another top pick there with the rumors floating around that they're after, you know, the forward defenseman split, so maybe a Nugent Hopkins and a Larson if he's available, or another guy like Dougie Hamilton, who's often thought to be a popular type of guy too.
Kyle, Winnipeg's NHL franchise, you know, because we can't call it anything, unfortunately, yet.
The Muffins, says it.
Winnipeg's got the seventh overall pick. Two-part question here. Who do you think will be there at seventh overall, and what are your thoughts on who maybe Kevin Cheveldayoff and Craig Heisinger might be targeting as a player that they want to be there at seven?
Well, you know, I just wrote maybe about a week or 10 days ago a column for Legal Curve at the Prospect Pulse, under the Prospect Pulse heading, rather. I really think that if they don't deal it, I know none of those guys really are not the flashy types, but I mean, that might sort of serve notice that Winnipeg, whatever's have arrived. If they do decide to make the pick, my guess, just extrapolating here, is I think they go with a safe type pick. And by safe pick, I mean, you know, Western League or Ontario League guy, probably wouldn't reach over to Europe just because, you know, some intangibles, the guy can't really get a finger on. So, you know, I mentioned in the article a guy like, you know, Ryan Strom or, you know, Nathan Beaulieu, or a guy like Dougie Hamilton still around. Just because there's so much fluidity in those even top 10 picks. I mean, there's several guys there that could go. I don't see them making a reach pick around there, you know, dipping back into the, you know, into the mid-teens. So my guess, a guy like Ryan Strom, Ryan Murphy's around, the offensive defenseman.
Do you think Sean Couturier might sorry, I was just going to say, do you think Couturier might be there at seven, and do you think that would be a good pick to take him at seven for the Jets? Or?
Yeah, he sure might be. That's a big sentiment there, and I think that's a good example, Ezra, of a guy that might have slipped a little bit. You know, he played a lot of the season with sort of suffering from the effects of an early bout of mono, so he read some stuff from his coach saying he never really retired. He was just struggling all year with fatigue. And so another guy, you know, like we talked about earlier, that was identified as a potential number one overall pick early, had holes picked in his game, had a tough season, has really slipped. So, you know, if he's around, I really think it would be tough for Cheveldayoff and Heisinger to pass on him, because that's a guy that really showed good improvement. You know, the 16- and 17-year-old had sort of an injury, not an injury, but an illness plague 18-year-old season. So you might get a steal there just with, you know, teams sort of not really taking into account that illness, just saying, oh, he kind of regressed a little bit as an 18-year-old, but skip him. But, yeah, if he's there, you take him. That's a big range of sentiment to play both ends of the ice, and he really has that high-end skill, too. So it doesn't hurt having those 6-foot-plus sentiment on your team.
It certainly doesn't.
Kyle Kozier, Illegal Curve scouting correspondent. Thanks for joining us this morning. We're going to hear from you on Friday when we're on with a special edition of the show, and we'll hear from you again Saturday live from the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yeah, really looking forward to it, guys.
Okay, thanks, Kyle.
Can't wait to be at the draft with you in Minneapolis. It's going to be lots of fun.
And Kyle, make sure you bring a taser in case Ezzy gets out of hand.
And make sure Ezzy's not in Minneapolis because the draft's in St. Paul.
Sorry, St. Paul. Yeah, exactly. St. Paul. Twin cities, so, Minneapolis, yeah. St. Paul.
Yeah, we'd appreciate it. Thanks, Kyle.
No problem, guys. Talk to you later.
Take care.
There, Kyle.
There's Kyle Kozier, Illegal Curve scouting correspondent. You can read more of his work on IllegalCurve.com with his article Prospect Pulse.
And follow him on Twitter now.
And he's also on Twitter. I see Kyle is where you can find him on Twitter.
I see Kyle K.
I see Kyle K?
Yeah.
Okay, at I see Kyle K. Yep. Sorry, thank you. You're telling me somebody else on Twitter is I see Kyle?
Mm-hmm.
That's troubling. Is there an imposter?
There's no other I see Drew.
Is there a fake Ezzy out there on Twitter?
Oh, I'm sure there is. Probably. I think Ezzy's a fake Ezzy.
Ezzy's the fake Ezzy? Yeah. That makes
I'm
sense.
I'm both the real and fake version of myself.
That's troubling and confusing all at the same time. Let's go to break when we come back at 10:30. Or actually, we'll be back next segment, but still to come. Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. I'm a little confused as to the music that we're coming back to.
I like it.
You like it?
Do
you
know what Tim's messing with our minds.
Sounds like some James Brown or something.
Tim?
Timmy, what is it?
It's The Doors.
The Doors?
The Doors with The Challenging.
Oh, there we go. You got a little Jim Morrison there.
Oh, okay. I can live with that then.
A little funky? It's a little funky.
Drew, you were 17 when the song came out, so you might not remember it.
Okay, hang on. Write it down. 10:21 a.m. The first AIDS joke of the week has been made. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We just heard from the Illegal Curve scouting correspondent. His name is Kyle Kozier. In case you missed any of the interview and any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe and get the show sent to you each and every week automatically.
But they can't. People can't get the show sent to them by letter because there's a postal strike. So we can't mail you the show.
Mm-hmm. Like a transcript of the show?
Yeah, we can't do that right now. But as soon as the Canada Post strike is over, we can mail you the show.
Which, in other words, means Ezra is quitting his job and going to start transcribing each and every show for you.
What if you mail it too successfully and then you have exceeded the 50% mark?
Drew, do you ever blind...
Nobody in the post office has ever delivered for 50%.
Drew, do you ever blind CC?
That's another Seinfeld reference.
Do you ever blind CC, Drew?
Blind CC, yeah. When I'm talking about you and I don't want you to see it.
Yeah.
Blind CC. Anyways, welcome back to the program. Still to come in a couple minutes' time, Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is going to join us to discuss Craig Ramsey, a little bit about his coaching style. You know, potentially we might see him here in Winnipeg as the head coach. So we want to get into a little bit deeper into see what Craig Ramsey brings to the table. You know, we'll take some of your phone calls throughout the rest of the program, 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. If you want to call in, tell us whatever's on your mind. If you want to talk about the hockey draft, the NHL entry draft coming up Friday is the first round, 6 o'clock Winnipeg time. And then Saturday will be the rest of the rounds. I believe it's rounds 2 through 7. Is that right?
That's right. And Winnipeg doesn't have a second round pick.
So we're picking 7th overall, and then we're not picking again until the 3rd round, which will probably be around... noon or so on Saturday?
No, it goes really quickly, Drew. I think the draft starts at 9, if I recall, when I was in Montreal.
10, I thought.
Even 10, and the picks are a couple minutes apart. So
really?
You might be right, maybe around 11:30.
11:30, 12 o'clock, somewhere in that vicinity.
The second round pick was, of course, part of the Andrew Ladd deal last year, so I think that's something they would do again.
Oh, yeah, I think you take Andrew Ladd for a second round pick any day of the week.
Well, and Vishnevsky.
Of course. Let's talk about for a couple seconds. I just want to mention, of course, the draft party that's taking place at the MTS Center next Friday.
Your condo, Drew.
It's not at my condo. It's at the MTS Center. Okay. I can't quite fit 15,000 people into my condo.
They're going to sell 15,000 tickets?
Well, the tickets are, I think, $10 per person, and if you're a child under 12 or something, it's $5 per person. How many tickets do you think they're going to sell? Keep in mind that somebody in attendance will win 2 season tickets.
I think they're going to sell a lot of tickets, and I think they should.
I was looking for a more specific number there.
8,311.
I'm going to go $1.
You think he's
I'm gonna say 5,000.
You think there's gonna be 5,000 people there?
Are you gonna write these down?
Sure, I'll write these down. Then I have to keep the paper.
Okay, so Richard said $1.
Richard said 5,000 people. Ezzy, what did you say?
I said 8,731.
Okay, can you just give me one, like sort of
an 10,000.
So you went from 8,731 to 10,000.
10,000. True North has shown that their marketing genius is 10,000.
What do you say, Drew?
I think they'll sell it out.
What?
People want to get that opportunity to win a ticket.
It's just one ticket
it's
to a game.
Two tickets.
Is it season ticket?
It's a season ticket.
Oh, okay.
Ticket.
Okay, 12,000.
Given away by MTS.
12,000, Drew.
Yeah, that's right.
MTS. Change it to 12,000.
Oh, yeah. 1 in 12,000 is a great chance to win.
Well, considering your chances right now, if you don't already own tickets, are probably zero, it's probably a better opportunity.
Yeah.
That's how you pack the place.
Are they P2s or what are they? Do we know what section?
We're not 100% sure what they are, but it doesn't matter. It's a chance to win a full season ticket at no charge.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good deal for a $10 investment.
Drew's got his P6s.
On a draft that you might be watching at home anyways. So you go in...
For free.
So care, $10? I'm just saying, I think it's another... Look, if they put 15,000 people in there, it's another 150 grand.
There's going to be as many people watching the draft as there were at Fleetwood Mac last summer, probably.
What are you talking about?
Fleetwood Mac played the MTS Center last year. I think there was about 12,000 people there.
But why would you pick Fleetwood Mac?
Many bands.
Well, I mean, it wasn't... I could say Pearl Jam from like 4 years ago. That was 15, but I don't think they're going to get 15. Look at 12. I'm going to win this. I think I'm going to win this one.
Stevie Nick, but you said 10.
I changed it to
12 once he found out they were selling a season ticket.
So you have a crush on Stevie Nicks?
I'm more curious if he's right if there were actually about 12,000 people at Fleetwood Mac last summer.
There's no way. Isn't it usually like
call in if you were at the Fleetwood Mac concert and tell me how many people were... Reference Rob Williams' Winnipeg Free Press article and let us know. But it was a well-attended concert. I would know because I was selling hot dogs outside of it, and I made a pretty good coin, Drew.
Pretty!
I sold a few Smokies that night, Drew.
Does anybody know what he's talking about?
Not a clue.
What are you talking about? You know, this is another one of those incidents when Leah Hextall was in the studio with you that one day, and you suggested the team
I
name.
I miss Leah.
And you suggested the team name should be the Manitoba Muffins, and she looked at you and said, "What is wrong with you?" That's another one of those incidents.
And I said, "Leah, sit down, because it's a long story."
What's wrong with you?
Yeah. It's not something that could be answered in one or two sentences.
Well.
Anyways.
What is wrong with you?
Okay, so no, but I mean, I think it's a good thing that the True North is going to have a crowd at the MTS Center to watch the draft pick, because this is the first, basically, you know, announcement that's going to be affect the on-ice.
I'm confused, and I'm going to get in there, Izzy, because isn't it free to get, like, isn't the draft free?
Like the draft in Minneapolis, you mean? It was in Montreal when you guys went, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's how we got tickets, but yeah, I believe for season ticket holders, I know people who got tickets to this one, it's free. Yeah,
for season ticket holders.
Yeah, they're charging you to watch it on TV.
Hold on, Richie. It's free for season ticket holders to go to the MTS Center and watch
it? No. It's free for people in that are wild ticket holders to go and see it.
Because when I was at the draft in Montreal, as soon as the Habs picked Louis LeBlanc in the middle of the first round, the place was empty.
Yeah.
Nobody was there. They all left. Literally all left at one time.
Literally.
They got Did you
their
stay?
French, they got, yeah, I stayed. They got their French pick and then they left. Like, seriously, that's all it was.
And Richie got French fries.
I got French fries. Anyhow. But
in Quebec, they don't call them French fries. They call them just chips. Fries.
Don't they call them pomme de terre?
Pomme de terre, yeah. That's right. Drew, you speak French. Nice.
Why are we talking about French fries?
Okay, so anyways, quickly, before we get to Chris Livermore, most people think...
Chris called in. He said he's not coming on anymore.
The consensus is that, in terms of the draft, it seems like people believe, and Kyle did a great job. He wrote an article on legalcurve.com, which he alluded to earlier, called Mocking the Draft. He puts up... 7 mock drafts or 8 mock drafts. We can go over them quickly right now.
We'll do it later in the show.
Most people have him taking Ryan Strome. People like him. As Kyle mentions, he's improved every year. He can put points up at even strength. He's a really hard worker. He's just right-handed shooting forward. They like him. His game is supposed to be a all-around very, very solid. You know, some people have him taking Dougie Hamilton. We'll see. There's a lot of quality players there, but... Kyle thinks they might move up. I'm not necessarily sure, but it's an interesting, and it depends on the cost, right, guys?
That's right.
I mean, we'll see what happens.
How can Dougie Hamilton's nickname not be Teach Me How to Dougie Hamilton? It has to be that. Sorry, that was from an hour and a half ago. Sorry, Richie, I just had a moment.
Is this your King's Head stand-up routine right now?
Again, what is wrong with you?
Drew, you can teach me how to Dougie, right?
I actually don't know how to Dougie. Richard?
And so, Strome is... Guys,
it's impossible to.
Strome is the guy that people seem to be think Winnipeg's targeting. I spoke to Corey Perlman yesterday, Hockey Prospectus. He covers amateur draft and all of things of that type for the website and for other websites, his own website.
what he told me is that one other team ahead of Winnipeg has Ryan Strome very, very high on their draft list. But he would think that if Strome does fall to the Winnipeg franchise and no other of these guys have fallen, like a Couturier, things like that, he thinks that probably Strome would be the pick. And that seems to be what I'm hearing. But who knows? I mean, they're going to keep it close to the vest. I mean, the truth is, it's not even, you don't have months and months of speculation, because even who the Atlanta brass liked, the first pick is the pick that the GMs generally have a big say over.
Right.
And then after that, they don't have much of a say over anything.
Because they have better things to worry about. That's when you
rely on Marcel Comeau and the scouting staff.
But my point is, Drew, is that even if it was, say, you know, Strome 3 weeks ago, it might have changed. So keeping it close to the vest, it's hard for it to have already leaked. I mean, this group might not even have decided yet.
That's right, and we'll find out in about 6 days' time. A week from now, we'll definitely know when we're on the air come Saturday, and we're going to be on the air Friday as well. Anyways, let's head to commercial break. When we come back, Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.